All right, good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I'm calling this remote meeting of the House Preventing Homelessness Division to order. If the committee legislative assistant could take the roll to determine which members are present. The chair is present.
Keeler.
Keeler present.
Keeler present. New Brindley.
Present.
New Brindley present. Davids.
Davids present.
David's present. Heinrich.
Heinrich present.
Heinrich present. Hollins. Hornstein.
Oh, Hornstein sorry. Present. Oh.
Representative Hollins present.
Hollins present. Hornstein present. Howard.
Howard present.
Howard present. Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Petersburg.
Present.
Petersburg present. Ryer.
Present.
Ryer present. We do have a quorum.
Thank you very much. So we had two hearings last week. So we're going to have two sets of minutes to approve. I'm looking for a motion to approve the minutes for our regularly scheduled meeting, which was on Wednesday, February 7th, 2021.
Madam Chair, I'll move to approve.
Representative Keeler moves approval of the minutes for February 17th, 2021. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, if we could unmute for a moment and do a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the motion prevails in the minutes for February 17th, 2021. Representative Keeler, would you like to move approval of the minutes for February 19th, 2021 as well for us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move to approve.
Thank you so much. Representative Keeler moves approval of the minutes for February 19th, 2021. Any discussion? Seeing none, if you could unmute for a moment, and all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes for February 19th, 2021 are approved. Thank you so much. So today we have one bill and one presentation. And as we've heard throughout our committee and our time together, you know, the issue of homelessness is varied and diverse, and people take kind of different circumstances lead people into that situation. And what we have also heard, especially I think from, you know, as we've heard the voices of people who've experienced homelessness, is that there are a lot of different solutions that people need. And so today we're going to be discussing tiny homes and sort of tiny home communities, both through our bill and our presentation. And this is, you know, sort of one of those solutions that's emerged as a way to maybe meet the needs of some folks whose needs aren't met through the traditional emergency shelter system. So first we have on the agenda is House File 1484. 1484 was referred to this division by the chair of our full committee, Representative Schultz, and Vice Chair Keeler is presenting the bill. Welcome to your committee, Vice Chair Keeler. Would you like to move your bill and get it before the committee?
I would, Madam Chair.
All right, so we have, so Rep. Keeler is moving that House File 1484 be re-referred to the full committee. Vice Chair Keeler, please present your bill to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think we've learned in this process that homelessness is this massive issue, and we have to work collaboratively to come up with solutions. I am a big fan of tiny home communities. It's something I've been talking about for a long time. So as I've been walking through this journey and connecting with other people in the community, I'm really excited to present this bill. The one thing I know is that our churches and nonprofit organizations are really stepping up to the plate and looking for solutions, and we have to be collaborative in these efforts. House File 1484, the nice part about it is it's no cost to our state budget, which we all like right now as we're in a deficit. It's a way that we can move forward to provide opportunities for tiny homes in our communities. We've been able to work with Senator Housley on this, and so it is an effort that's moving forward both here and in the Senate. But also, I think it's important that we mention that, you know, our churches have a mission. and they want to do good in our communities. And we want to be able to partner with that bigger goal. We have so many people that are on the street that are looking for some sort of permanent steps forward to work for a more successful life, for a more safe life, and to provide something for our next generations. And I'm really pleased that we've been able to come together. Now I do know, and I will say that we've been working with the League of Minnesota Cities and the Department of Labor, and some of the language that we will need to address. So if those questions come up, we do have some people here today to help us with that. But I hope that we all can move forward and see the good in this bill and seeing good in the possibilities with an open heart and an open mind. So with that, I ask for your support and we'll pass it over to our testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Keeler. So, and also just on that front, I did have I got a phone call from one of our GOP colleagues in the House last night about this bill, you know, saying how supportive he was and that he wanted to sign on. So I don't know if that his name's on the bill yet, but we're gonna, this effort is bipartisan in both bodies of the legislature. And so hopeful that we can move it forward. So we have a few author testifiers and then some testifiers from the public. So we're going to start off with the author testifiers, beginning with Ann Krisnick.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ann Krisnick. I'm the Executive Director of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, which is made up of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and the Islamic Center of Minnesota. And we work on issues that really speak to the core tradition and faith values of all of those traditions. The issue that's addressed in this bill came to our attention when people from several parishes in the state approached us and said they really wanted to work on a project, but there was a provision of Minnesota law that was preventing them from doing what they wanted to do. So the bill allows communities, we call them micro units, tiny homes sometimes has kind of a term of art, and it's structured in such a way that parishes can either sponsor a community on their property, or they can contribute by actually creating and building one of the homes on their site, and then it's built on wheels and it's moved to the community. So the problem comes in, the issue the bill is addressing is right now, anything that someone would stay in and is on wheels is considered a recreational vehicle under Minnesota law, and you can't live in one permanently. They're only approved for temporary housing. And so what this bill does is it creates a very limited exception only for what we call micro units. I'll walk through the bill, but just a little bit of background before I do. If they're part of a sacred settlement or community, and that's when they're on the site of a church or a synagogue or a mosque or some religious organization, and certain other requirements are met. And when that happens, the law would allow these to be permanent housing. They're really intended for people who have been chronically experiencing homelessness to create a community and a place of belonging for them. And you'll hear a little bit more about the project in just a moment. But I want to walk through the bill. Before that, I want to make two comments. I want to make sure that you note that there's a letter from the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless in support of this bill in your packet. And the city of St. Paul has been a strong supporter. They would have approved this if state law would have allowed them to. And their letter is not quite here, but it should be here later today. And we'll forward it and make sure it gets out to the committee. But if you walk through the bill, I'm just going to do a quick walkthrough. Both the terms sacred settlement, sacred community, we use both of those terms, and micro-unit dwellings are not defined in Minnesota law, so those would be new definitions. So homeless person, very low income, is the definition that currently exists, and you've heard a lot about that in this committee. Micro unit is the tiny homes you think of here, and each person has their own home with a full kitchen, or not full, but certainly a workable kitchen, a place to sleep, a bathroom they can use with compostable or dry toilet. They can invite people in for hospitality. They can lock the door and be safe. They can plant flowers and make it their own. So you see the micro unit there. The sacred settlement, as I talked about, is only those cases where a faith community, a religious organization, is sponsoring one of these communities of the micro units on their site. We've been working really closely with the League of Minnesota Cities, and there's been a lot of changes from our first draft of the bill. One of the things that we'll be working on specifically with them is when we talk about who can live there, you'll hear a little bit about missionals, which are people who permanently live there that haven't experienced homelessness. We'll have a little bit of a change in the definition here in that portion. So in order to qualify, the micro unit is smaller than 400 square feet. It has to be part of this settlement, and the two big changes that we're going to see from what you see in the bill, I did some kind of flagging as issues come up. We've been working with Dolly as well. The bill, as you see, is somewhat of a mix of permanent and then the RV language. So we'll be removing the ability or removing the language about a permanent foundation. And instead it will say that it is anchored by means satisfying the anchoring requirements. We'll have the building material languages, the insulation factor, the toilet language, all of those will be relatively unchanged. We may revise the toilet language slightly to allow for new advances in technology. And then the big change, if you look at 2.5, 2.6, 2.7, 2.8 there, I think that it's much cleaner if we do not try to meet any requirements of the permanent building code. And we just say it would have to meet the requirements of the American National Standards Institute or the ANSI standard. What that does is it takes away the things that are built in currently into the law that would have inspection. And so we'll see an amendment that would create an inspection process. And so the units would be inspected by the National Organization of Alternative Housing, which is commonly called NOAA. I know for those of you working in housing, NOAA has a totally different acronym. So we won't use that here, but if you hear that in this context, that's what that means. And they're set up where someone can take video, individual faith communities take video as they're building along and take pictures. And so you can see the electrical, you can see the heating and all of that. And then that's reviewed afterwards and it's certified by NOAA when it's completed. And so then, and it would need to be part of the sacred settlement. And so then if you're doing that, you see in subdivision three, if we have that settlement and I have that small space that's mine, that is only approved if, or it's only lawful, if they have access to these other facilities as part of the common house, which may be the actual church building or church center, or it might be a separate building that they have created. But those spaces would have full bathrooms, showers, laundry, individual meeting spaces to meet with a caseworker or a lawyer or a mental health professional. They would have a full kitchen and space where people could dine communally and space where they could meet together. And then they would have to meet all the requirements for, you see any of those recreational vehicles. So that seems an odd word to use, recreational vehicle, in this sense. But we'll continue our discussions both with the league and with Dolly to address this. But I also want to point at the very bottom, they would be required to comply with all of the municipal approval and regulation requirements as a permitted use, conditional use, or a planned unit development. So that's a quick walkthrough. I'm happy to answer any other questions, but I know we're on a tight timeline. So quite simply, this bill would allow an RV, as you know, Minnesota recognizes that, to be a permanent place for people to stay if it's a micro unit and it's part of one of these communities. And we really ask that you allow churches to carry out their mission as they really want to and allow this option for people. This will probably come up in Gabrielle's testimony, but we have a community ready to go in St. Paul with 6 homes. They're all built by different congregations in different cities of different denominations. 4 would be filled by people experiencing homelessness, and 2 would be filled by missionals. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Krisnick. Next up, we have Gabrielle Claudis. I'm just going to remind folks we're asking us to keep it to about 2 minutes for each testifier. Ms. Claudis.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Yeah, it's a real honor to bring this before you. This is 4.5 years in the making. It began as research out of the University of Minnesota. I'm a research fellow there. I'm also the CEO and co-founder of Settled. Settled was birthed out of the University of Minnesota, looking at the research across the nation on how are people responding to chronic homelessness? How are local governments responding? How's our federal government responding? How are churches, faith communities, and what we saw from just hundreds of listening sessions and walking with the chronically homeless and walking alongside people and getting to know them personally, inviting them into our home and into our abundance, was that there is a common theme among the chronically homeless. These are the hardest to house and most expensive to the public. As you all know, you've been studying this for many weeks now. and maybe a whole career of looking at this, that are chronically homeless don't just lack housing. They really have experienced the profound and catastrophic loss of family, and that's led to the profound and catastrophic loss of community. These are the outcasts of our society. They're standing on the street corner holding a sign saying anything will help, and we only have really just band-aid solutions. And our heart is to invite people into a place where they are welcomed, where they're known, where they're loved, everything that each one of us have and need, and to really provide a support system, a holistic support system of people that aren't trying to fix them, but just accepting them as they are and augmenting that role of family so that they just maybe can experience that for the first time ever in their lives. Our chronically homeless neighbors on the street are people that have experienced extreme neglect and abuse and violence, often from childhood. And this is an opportunity to invite them into something where they feel like they have a place where they can grow roots and become settled. The distinction between a sacred settlement and any other tiny home village other than one that you're gonna see across the nation is that we have housed and unhoused coming and living intentionally together. Our missional neighbors are on mission to love their neighbor as themselves. That's across the board found in all of the major world religions, some sense of the golden rule. And so it's intended that missional neighbors and are people that could otherwise live in wherever they want, in a single family home and in a wealthy community, but are choosing to give up that lifestyle and come and have a faithful presence in the community. They volunteers, they don't get paid, they are there to just be good neighbors, to invite people into their abundance, into family meals, walks, traditions, cultures, and to learn the cultures and traditions and superpowers of our people coming off the streets too. This isn't a charity model. It's really intended to extend reciprocity, that we have something to learn from one another and that we're better when we're together. So we're inviting people to come in and be settled. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for that, Ms. Clouders. We appreciate it. Next up is Pastor John Clouder. And if I said your name really wrong, Pastor, I'm sorry. Please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Absolutely. Well done, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm very grateful to be able to share in this vision with you, because we heard a very similar presentation from Gabrielle, and that really stirred our congregation, and that's why we're here today. Because as a church, we heard this was our opportunity to be part of that solution. I'm sitting with Joel Molnar, a member of my congregation, someone who's been on our development committee, because we've determined this is a path forward. This is a way for churches to be part of that solution, to be answering that call to say, look, one of the greatest assets that we have is the land that our churches are on, to say, look, this is a way for us to give back. This is a way for us to say, welcome home and be on this land and be in community with us. And so excited at the opportunity here and being able to say, as our congregation has dug into this, we've spent about 2 years listening and learning and even discerning as a church whether this is something we wanted to go forward with. Last January, we had a vote, and 73% of our congregation said that we'd like to go forward with this and look at what we can do to make this happen. One of the features about our conversation is that in Forest Lake, where I'm a pastor, is we have veterans in our community, and we thought this would be a wonderful way for us to be able to host some veterans. Meeting the needs of our community in that respect. I'm a National Guard chaplain myself. And so that was one of the things that really drew me, and it was part of the appeal to this model when I first approached Ann and Gabrielle from Settled. And so I certainly welcome any further questions that come up later, but I know that there's a lot of other information that's going to get covered today. So I really appreciate your time, and thank you very much for exploring this and taking this on. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Pastor Clouder. Up next, we have Laura Smith. Ms. Smith, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, greetings and salutations. Laura Smith, and I'm a I have not, I'm not anxious. All right. This is an okay thing. Hi. I appreciate you guys taking time to learning about and considering the tiny home community and not an RV style. And I appreciate what Ann said about it not being recreational. It actually is a life-changing thing that can happen to chronically homeless people like I have, like myself. And I don't know what else to say. I apologize. thank you everyone for your consideration. I just want to say I really appreciate what Settle does and how it has affected my life in so many ways, and I probably wouldn't still be here without them. And thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Smith. You did a great job, and I know it's nerve-wracking to be in front of us, and I think it'd be better if we were in person, but we really, really appreciate you being here and sharing your experience with us with Settled. So thank you so much. We're going to move on to public testifiers in a second, but I saw that Representative Hollins had her hand up. So if you want to go ahead now, or you can wait till after the testifiers, it's up to you, Representative. Representative Hollins?
Sorry, you cut out there for a second.
I was just saying, we have some public testifiers, but if you want to have a question or a comment at this point, we can go ahead with that.
Sure. I mean, I'll be really quick. I just wanted to say, because the site in St. Paul where this is planned is in my district. I actually live like right in walking distance of it. I know exactly where the church is. And I'm really excited about this. As a person who this is kind of in my backyard, I am thrilled that this is an opportunity for people who are experiencing homelessness near me. And what I really love about this model is that it is relational. And I think that's what's been missing from a lot of what we've been working on in preventing homelessness and in working in homelessness, is that a lot of our shelters feel really transactional. And this is really building something up. It's not just saying, here's a place to sleep. It's like, let's build a community. Let's create something for these folks. So they left something to look forward to, like the rest of us do when we go home. So I'm just really excited about it. Sorry.
No, that's great. Thank you so much, Representative Hollins. I wish it was going up in my neighborhood, so I'm just like a little bit jealous. So now we have some community testifiers. We do want to try to leave a little bit of time at the end for member questions and conversations. So again, if we could ask folks to be really brief, 2 minutes at the most. First, for public testifiers is Sue Whitelaw Phillips.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Sue Whitelaw Phillips, Executive Director of MICA and President of the National Coalition for the Homeless. Since I've testified before here, I will not give a lot of background on those two organizations, but our faith calls us to be a welcoming community, to love and treat others the way that we want to be treated. So our MICA members address the immediate needs of people experiencing homelessness in our communities, and then we work together to address the structural causes of homelessness and end homelessness, and to realize our mission to ensure everyone, without exception, has a safe, decent, accessible home that's affordable to them. MICA supports the diversity of tiny and micro home models. MICA and the National Coalition for the Homeless were involved in the development and are very supportive of the community first model of the tiny home development in Austin, Texas. One of our board members helped in developing that. The tiny home ownership in Detroit, Michigan. And Sean has a video of that if you'd like to take a look at a 2-minute video of how we use home ownership with tiny homes. And MICA is a collaborator on the Envision model of tiny homes in the Twin Cities. So 4 MICA board members are Envision leaders, which you will hear about in a few minutes. It's critical that people experiencing homelessness are key decision makers in designing, creating, and implementing their solutions to the housing crisis. Community first models combined with tiny homes provide that sense of security and belonging in a cooperative, supportive, and interdependent environment. The importance of a familiar community is critical for many of our people experiencing homelessness to successfully transition into home that are affordable as they find stability, belonging, and purpose in life. To prevent and end homelessness, which you all are here on this committee for, we must change our state building codes and local zoning codes, which we did in the city of Minneapolis, to expand the diversity of housing opportunities that are affordable in our communities across the state. And since the bill does have, in front of you, does have the definition of homeless person and very low income, I encourage you to take a look at that definition and to expand that definition to be more similar to the Department of Education's definition of homelessness. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Whitelaw Phillips. Next up, we have Karen Peterson. Ms. Peterson? I'll do one more call and then we'll have to move on to our next testifier. But if Ms. Peterson shows up, we can add her on at the end. Next up is Jeff O'Rourke, Pastor Jeff O'Rourke of Mosaic Christian Community. Welcome to the committee, Mr. O'Rourke. If you could just state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, hello. My name is Jeff O'Rourke, and hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you so much for all of your work, and thank you for allowing me to speak today in support of House File 1484. As I said, my name is Jeff O'Rourke, and I am blessed to be the lead pastor of Mosaic Christian Community here in St. Paul. And in 2012, after 75 plus years of serving St. Paul's East Side, First Church of the Nazarene found itself a disconnected commuter church. Those who remain desire to be more reflective of and resourceful to our Payne-Phelan neighborhood here. And so those leaders chose to close St. Paul First and relaunch as Mosaic Christian Community. And together we set out to live more hospitable lives by engaging strangers, inviting them to be guests, and equipping them to be hosts. And this mission has led us to turn over ground for refugee gardens. It has led us to host weekly summer block parties. It's led us to host Halloween and Easter events, local food trucks, anything that we can do so neighbors can come together, connect, and get to know one another. We've opened our doors as a polling station. We're a site for St. Paul Public Schools summer feeding program. We've hosted YouthWorks kids clubs and free flu shot clinics, wellness clinics, and so much more. And in 2018, we partnered with students, faculty, and neighbors to establish a free food shelf at Johnson High School. And then two summers ago, we again partnered with our neighborhood to establish a safe parking program. And this was the first of its kind program in the state of Minnesota. And our parking lot now hosts unsheltered women and women with dependents who are living in their cars. And Mosaic's parking lot serves as a safe place for those referred guests to park and be connected with Ramsey County resources. And through our neighborhood and county partnerships, we were connected with Settled. And Settled's community first response to homelessness fits our mission and vision and our community beautifully. And so our desire is to host a sacred settlement at Mosaic consisting of six tiny homes on our church grass. They'll have access to the church building as a common house. Four of those homes will be for people coming out of homelessness, and two homes would be for missionals. That word's come up already this morning. People who have experienced homelessness and are dedicated to living a life in community, offering their expertise, knowledge, and support. Now, I live in this neighborhood as well. So as a resident of our neighborhood, I echo some of my other neighbors this morning and can say we have a fantastic community here. We are inviting our unsheltered friends into a beautiful neighborhood here. And I believe our community will be a tremendous resource to our unsheltered friends. But I am also very confident that our unsheltered friends are going to become a tremendous blessing to our neighborhood as well. So, Madam Chair and members, please support House File 1484. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Pastor O'Rourke, for being with the committee. We appreciate it. Next up, I have Meredith Campbell.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Meredith Campbell. I'm testifying in support of the bill. My family and I live on the east side of St. Paul, and we attend church a couple blocks away at Mosaic Christian Community. Years ago, my husband and I lived in Hartford, Connecticut. We became friendly with a couple in crisis experiencing homelessness, Miguel and Bonnie. There were so many barriers to find them appropriate shelter. Sometimes they spent the bitter nights outside on the cold granite steps of our church, and we thought, there has got to be a better way for the church to respond. We lost touch with Miguel and Bonnie. We moved to St. Paul. We found a community and a church. We looked around at tent encampments and full shelters and thought, there has got to be a way for the church to respond. So our church piloted a program, the Safe Parking Program. We have the support of the St. Paul Police, the City Council, and most importantly, our neighbors. And yet, there has got to be something else we can do. Our church has a tiny plot of land and a modest building. And when the nonprofit Settled reached out to us and cast a vision for permanent homes and community for a few of our brothers and sisters, our church said, yes, we can fit 6 tiny homes on our land. We can renovate our building to be a common house with showers, laundry, meeting rooms, and a kitchen. We can make room for a table for 12. And I understand this isn't for every church, but for us, it simply makes sense. We are dedicated to joining with God and our neighbors in making the East Side a safe, peaceful, and loving community. We are committed to a lifestyle of hospitality. This neighborhood is my home. I would only ever be in support of what is best for my home. We want it to thrive, to be safe and clean. So we talked to our neighbors, held information sessions, knocked on doors, passed out invitations to come and tour the homes. For our sacred settlement, residents will have undergone background checks, been interviewed, signed a housing agreement, and will pay rent. All residents must also abide by community rules and a good neighbor agreement. As people are sleeping outside tonight in freezing temperatures, this bill is timely. This bill helps Minnesotans be the kind of people we want to be. It allows our church to be the church we want to be. People who can say to a few of our brothers and sisters experiencing homelessness, come, come where you are, come as you are, come, welcome home. Thank you for your support of this bill and your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. Campbell, for being with the committee today. Next up, we have Sing Vang.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for your time and your services and the opportunity to speak and to support the House File 1484. My name is Sing Vang. My family and I have lived in St. Paul for 10 years. Like many, my family have also been recipients of the assistance in our times of dire need. The services available during our need has contributed to the hearts of those serving and those leaders who support these efforts. Mosaic is a church that we have been involved with because of their vision. It's a community that values the well-being of neighbors. It's outward focused and strives for tangible, practical services and solutions. In our efforts, Mosaic has opened our parking lot, as mentioned, for a safe parking. Prior to the pandemic, we had weekly block parties during the summer months and provided meals, interactive games, and resources. And in this time of the pandemic, we are pursuing housing options. We've canvassed, invited, and held listening events with our neighbors about a tiny home community. In conclusion, our desire is to provide the opportunity for lifelong friendships and neighborhood housing, a beautiful, safe, and dignified community. So again, Madam Chair, members, we would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with the committee today, Mr. Vang. Up next, we have Scott McCown, who's the Assistant Director in the Construction Codes and Licensing Division at the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. Welcome to the committee, Mr. McCown.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Good morning, I should say, actually, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Scott McCown. I'm an Assistant Director with the Construction Codes and Licensing. It's a division of the labor and industry. I'm here this morning to share the department's concerns with House File 1484. Although we agree with the goals of this legislation to provide permanent housing for the homeless, as drafted, the bill falls short of achieving public safety. It is our role to ensure public safety in the construction of buildings. We met with the bill author yesterday to share our concerns and commit to continuing to work with Representative Keeler and stakeholders on the legislation. Although I'll go into a few details, our greatest concern is the apparent contradiction of the intended manner of construction and whether the housing is temporary or permanent. If micro units are intended to be built as a permanent dwelling on a permanent foundation, then they must comply in all aspects with the state building code. If they're intended to be built as a temporary dwelling constructed on a chassis and wheels as a mobile dwelling as defined, then they do not need to comply with the state building code. I just want to make a few points. Subdivision 2, part 6 of the bill, beginning on line 2.5, allows a micro unit to be built to one of three standards. However, only two reference compliant permanent housing. The Minnesota Residential Code defines a dwelling unit as a single unit providing complete independent living facilities for one or more persons, including permanent provisions for living, sleeping, eating, cooking, and sanitation. Minnesota Rules 1360, 61, and Appendix Q are chapters of the state building code that contain regulations to ensure co-compliance with structural design and construction, fire protection, heat loss, illumination, climate control, health, safety, and sanitation. ANSI A119.2 is a standard for a trailer type recreational vehicle that is designed to provide temporary accommodation for recreation, camping, or seasonal use. It's not regulated by the building code. Instead, ANSI A119 is a standard used for constructing RVs and are licensed by the Department of Public Safety. If the dwellings are built to ANSI standard, they lack necessary features of co-compliance permanent dwellings that are required to meet plumbing, electrical, HVAC, and insulation standards and are constructed on a permanent foundation that meet wind and snow load requirements. House file 1484 appears to be more closely resembled standards for a campground with common cooking and sanitation facilities for temporary recreational use. We look forward to continuing to work on the legislation to achieve the goal of housing the homeless while assuring public safety. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. McCown. So I just wanted to note that I know that I spoke with Vice Chair Keeler yesterday, and you know, she told me about your conversation, and the intention is that you know, should we move this bill forward, that we will be moving it through the Department of Labor and Industry. I mean, sorry, the Labor and Industry Committee. I don't know what its name is. I'm sorry. The Committee of Jurisdiction for your department, Dolly, will be taking a look at this bill. So we're really hopeful that we can overcome, you know, some of the concerns that you have. And thank you for your willingness to continue to work on this bill with us. We have some more testifiers, but I just wanted to pass it over to Representative Heinrich, if you had a question. I know you're sort of like in this industry, so maybe it's specific to our last testifier.
Yeah, it is specific to our last testifier. And I have some other questions, but I thought Mr. McCown could maybe address a couple questions that I had. First, I want to make the point that I appreciate his testimony and some of the real issues revolving around building codes. But as all of us know, building codes don't help people living in tent cities or sleeping under a bridge. And so I think it's important for us to look at unique solutions to this issue. And I just love the fact that these faith-based organizations are coming forward to not only provide some housing, but develop real meaningful relationships with people. And I think that can really help us get at some of the root issues in helping to prevent homelessness or prevent further homelessness for somebody already experiencing that. I don't know if he can answer the couple other questions here. I just had about maybe this is for somebody else, but I had questions about the ability for you using subsidies, either federal or state subsidies. I think that one of the testifiers, Meredith Campbell, mentioned signing agreements and paying some rent in some form. And so I'm just interested in kind of that if subsidies would be able to be used for that. And then are there any exemptions for any of the existing like statutory eviction processes and things like that? So I'm certainly interested in a few other things along with Mr. McCown's concerns. Maybe, like I said, a few of those might be questions for other testifiers later on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Heinrich. I don't know, I do want to get us back to our testifiers. But if anybody has any of the testifiers or the author has a comment on Representative Heinrich's question, since it came up, maybe we should just do that now. As far as subsidies, I don't know if Ms. Campbell, if you have any info about that.
Yeah, I can take that one. So thank you so much.
Sorry, could you just say your name again for the committee?
Yes, I'm Gabrielle Claudis.
Perfect, thank you.
So a community first approach is what we are bringing forward as part of a sacred settlement. So it's building on a housing first approach. Now, the housing first approach requires subsidies, and we know that those are pretty scarce, and we want to be a blessing to the state. And so everything that we're doing is privately funded. We require no government subsidies. In fact, we're completely funded for Mosaic and overfunded. We've had people ordinary people give their inheritance away. We've had philanthropists come into this. We've had people that are in poverty themselves give money to this. I mean, there's just opens up an enormous amount of resources from people who otherwise haven't really been able to contribute to building permanent housing. And it's a price point that people can wrap their arms around. We're building $25,000 and $40,000 homes built like a single family home made to last 100 years, contributing to the housing stock. But we're just pulling in people that otherwise haven't been able to contribute to the multi-million-dollar multifamily housing that we're building as affordable housing currently.
Great, thank you, Ms. Claudis. And Representative Heinrich, if it's okay with you, we'll just go ahead with the rest of the testimony, and then if there's more questions, we can do that at the end.
Yeah, sure, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rep. Okay, so finally on my list, I have Patrice Critchley Maynor. I'm sorry, if I'm mispronouncing your name.
Hi, you can pronounce Maynor any way you want. It's my husband's name, not mine.
Great. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrice Critchley Maynor, and I direct the Social Outreach Office for the Catholic Diocese of Duluth, and I'm a member of the Cathedral of Our Lady Parish in Duluth. I have lived in Duluth all my life. Over the past 23 years, I have worked with homeless people, and I'm finding some sad changes in what homelessness looks like. 10 years ago, most people seeking shelter in Duluth were homeless for the first time, almost all of them. Today, that number is 12%. That means we have a chronic, tragic problem in Minnesota that's silently getting worse, and it exists all over the state, not just in the metro. Faith communities see these problems daily and are often at a loss as to how to solve these problems when there's such a tremendous lack of housing. We know that homelessness is a complex problem requiring multiple approaches, and congregations often have the skill, the desire, the empathy, and the resources to be part of the solution. We're asking for the state to adapt the regulations just so we can offer housing to those who are hardest to house. When people are enveloped in a caring community, transformation happens. Not overnight, but over time. As a person of faith, I'll quote Pope Francis calling all people of goodwill to a culture of encounter. So if you can help us out with this, we can follow what all religions call for, to care for our most vulnerable and affirm their dignity as children of God. Thanks.
Thank you so much for your testimony. So I did have a couple other folks on the list to testify. Washington County Commissioner Fran Myron, I believe, is with us. Commissioner Myron?
Good morning, Chair Gomez and committee members. I am Fran Myron, Washington County Commissioner. My district is most of the northern third of Washington County. On the south is Matamidi, on the north is the city of Forest Lake and the communities in between. The average home value in Washington County is at or near the top of the metropolitan region, and market rents are high, which in turn means that many households in the county are struggling and considered burdened. About 22% of all county households pay more than 30% of their income toward housing. And about a third of those pay more than 50% of their income toward housing. The county needs more affordable housing units, and our community development agency, which I also serve on the board of, is working to meet that need by working with our cities, our nonprofits, and private developers. We also have adults and families that struggle to find permanent housing. Throughout the pandemic, the county has been providing shelter for more than 50 households on any given day. Most of that housing is provided at hotels, which we contract with to provide that housing. We're having some success in finding permanent housing for those leaving our shelter care, but certainly more needs to be done. more options need to be created. I've been aware of the potential partnership at Faith Lutheran Church in Forest Lake to use micro units to house homeless individuals. I appreciate the work of the church and its members. We need to solve the problem of homelessness in our county and throughout the region, and it will take collaborations between public, private, sector entities, nonprofits, and faith-based organizations. The county would certainly play a role in providing services to the residents in these homes and help to find more permanent traditional housing for those who seek it. As a former mayor, I understand and appreciate the role that cities play in this process in approving these types of developments. House File 1484, Subdivision 4, Line 2.22, clearly recognizes the local authority. My testimony today simply supports this effort and the effort of so many others to increase the availability of affordable housing options and reduce the number of Washington County residents and residents throughout the region and state who do not have a place to call home. Madam Chair, I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Mirren, for your testimony. Next up, Andrea Hinderaker. I'm sorry, I'm doing really bad with the last names.
It's Hinderaker. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. That's actually my ex-husband's name, so you can do whatever you need to do. Thank you, Madam Chair, and for the members of the committee for this time to speak. So I'm coming on behalf of a voice that has worked with the chronically homeless for just about 20 years now. And I've worked in all facets of the journey of homelessness. I currently manage the Safe Space Emergency Shelter in St. Paul that is run by Model Cities here in Frogtown. Over the 20 years that I've been working with the homeless, I have participated in the process of finding folks who are long-term homeless, finding them housing, whether it was through the GRH Group Residential Housing Program, through Model Cities here, where we have project-based apartments for families with multiple children, single-parent families. And what I have seen time and time again is that the large multi-dwelling complex, it is effective and an enjoyable experience for folks who have come to a place in their life where they have purpose and they are self-motivated and they have a reason to continue to move about their day. When you take drowning people and put them into a large building of drowning people, there is so little opportunity for success. And this is what I have seen time and time again. Not only do the landlords and developers find themselves in a problem of being able to keep up with all of the many complexities that are coming with their clientele, but we have people seeking assistance from people who need assistance. And we have people who are trying to battle addiction, who are surrounded by others who are battling addiction. So in essence, what we have done is we have said to people, you need to take this shelter because it's better than the street. And those of us who have been housing advocates have had to convince ourselves that we needed to get someone off the street at whatever cost. We knew it was a landlord that would not care for them. We knew it was a dwelling that had no reflection on the value of their humanity. One small example is the classic wet house model. We have one here in St. Paul. We have many chronic alcoholics that are experiencing homelessness at an accelerated rate. And we feel that the best thing we can do is get them off the street. But we house them in a large multi-dwelling complex filled with other folks who are battling alcoholism. And we know when they sign that lease, they will die in that unit. We know this. We know this because they're now isolated from their community. They have alcohol at their fingertips and they're waking up every day with no purpose but to feed an addiction that is killing them. This is the world that I experience every single day. At our emergency shelter, we have 64 adult beds and we turn away people every single night. Even though we have 400 homeless individuals in hotels, we have a large shelter through Catholic Charities, we continue to turn people away. I support this settled project on so many levels, and I hear the complexities, the zoning and the different regulations in place. But I can't help but say, those zoning and regulations at this point in time, they're not logical to me. And homelessness is not logical to me. So it appears to be that we could all meet in this illogical place and find solutions. If we have sent people to the moon and we are now looking at Mars, but our homeless situation is exactly the same, if not worse, and we can't get past zoning, we can't get past what we know, what we're familiar with, what makes sense to a thriving, healthy community of people that don't suffer the many barriers that our long-term homeless folks suffer. It doesn't make sense to me at all. I love the call to the religious communities. 100%. This is that moment. This is that moment where they say, here we are. What do you need from us? And this is that time. What Settle is offering is purpose. And I will close with this. What happens in long-term homelessness is you forget who you are. You forget the skill set that you had when you were growing up, the dreams that you had when you were a child. You forget that you're a handy person, that you can fix things, that you can make things. You forget that you can cook meals. You forget that you have a sense of humor that lightens up a room. In the settled community, you have the opportunity to find your space and then realize, I have something to offer. I forgot. I've been surviving every single day. I forgot all of this purpose within me because I haven't even had a chance to utilize it. And now I have a neighbor who needs help shoveling their deck. Now I have a neighbor who I can make a meal for. Now I have a neighbor who I haven't seen for a few days. And I know that I can check on that neighbor and I can see that they are okay. Bringing back that purpose, that humanity, is what homeless solutions need to look like. It's not about a shelter. It is about reviving humanity and purpose. And I support this so much. I can't say it enough. And I have a line of people in my head that I know would move into these dwellings and find themselves again and be contributing members to these small communities in ways they had forgotten they had the power to be. And so with that, because I have so much more to say, I will close my comments at this time. Thank you for this.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Finally, Tom Fisher is on my list.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Tom Fisher. I'm a professor in the School of Architecture at the University of Minnesota, and I direct the Minnesota Design Center at the university. We've been engaged in working with addressing homelessness and working with people experiencing homelessness for years. And we were the place that basically spawned both Settled as well as Envision. That came from our conviction that the way we're really going to solve this issue is to think outside of the housing community, to find other partners who want to also solve this problem. And we've found those partners in both the healthcare community in the case of Envision and the faith community in the case of Settled. And both of these efforts really are a national model. I think we also have to remind ourselves that although the community first idea was really first developed in Austin, Texas, the way they have done it in Texas is not replicable, it's not scalable. And so the innovation that both Settled and Envision have brought to the community first model is to develop a replicable model that an individual faith community, an individual community or city can in fact realize. And so this is a nationally significant Minnesota innovation. And we should recognize the value of what you're all being asked to do here. This will be historic and this will be sort of, we hope and we believe will be followed in every other state in the union once we achieve this. I'm trained as an architect, and I just want to address the safety issue. These are safe units. We often confuse safety with words like permanent versus temporary. And, I think the idea is to make this a permanent housing that it is safe housing. And so all of the building code issues that we've looked into reinforce that point. And so it's a different kind of housing than the way most of our codes have been written. But that does not mean it's unsafe or unsanitary. And so we strongly believe that this is the right thing for Minnesota to do. It's the time for this to happen. And the University of Minnesota is really firmly, and my center is firmly behind your support of House File 1484. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fisher, for your testimony. So just a note for committee members, we've gotten a special dispensation from our technology overlords to go an extra 10 minutes, which is really excellent. We're very thankful for that. So we're going to have 10 minutes for discussion on this bill, but just do want to keep our conversation pretty concise. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in this, but so we want to have time for conversation. But I'll go first to Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I always appreciate your humor. I want to start, I'd like to ask a question, Madam Chair, and then I would like a follow-up if I can. First of all, I spoke to Representative Keeler about this bill a couple of weeks ago, and I've talked to the testifiers as well, and I'm really excited about this. I think this is a phenomenal program and idea, and just something that's so impressive. But the one question I have about the language and about the bill itself is we've heard a lot about the missionals. And I, you know, for me, I think so often the opposite of addiction and so many of the things that are wrapped into our issues of homelessness, the opposite of those things is connection. So I love this concept of the missionals, but they're not spelled out in the language of the bill. Of these sacred settlements. And so I'm wondering how that will function in reality, ensuring that we have those missionals as part of these communities.
Thank you. So yeah, I don't know if Ms. Krisnick or Ms. Cloudis has a comment on that.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We drafted the bill, so people may want to use it for other purposes. We'd be very open to including language about the missionals. And it's really key to the concept of settled, of really creating a community and belonging and welcoming people in. So we're working on some technical amendments. I think we talked about after discussions with Dolly and the League, and we'd be happy to expand on the language around the missionals. It's the key to what makes the program work.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and certainly I don't need to be prescriptive in the language, but I wonder if that's something we want to consider to ensure that that's a part of this program moving forward. The other comment I would make is I appreciate Mr. Fisher's comments about the safety of these homes. I understand that Dolly has concerns, and frankly, I think that Minnesota, the way they're laid out, Minnesota building codes get in the way of a lot of affordable housing for us. We know that in the state of Minnesota, regulations add about 30% to the cost of building homes in the state of Minnesota. We have a housing crisis. And my concern is that I really hope that Representative Keeler and the folks who have brought this bill forward, you know, as it turns out, we are the legislature and we can move forward and set law. That's our job. And I would hope that we do not allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good in this. You know, I think Representative Heinrich kind of said it, you know, that, you know, we're talking about moving folks from tents into housing. Certainly the specificity of the housing code as it stands now, the building code, having exceptions to this, certainly these micro units will be a safe place for these folks and a much safer place than where they are now. So I hope that we don't allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good as this bill moves forward. I understand the concerns, and I also agree 100% with Mr. Fisher that these are safe homes, and we need to help Minnesotans be in safe living circumstances, which is what this does. And I guess I would just say, I mean, just to put a finer point on it, you know, the building code didn't come into existence until the late 70s. The vast majority of homes in the city of Minneapolis pre-exist the building codes. They didn't even exist. So to suggest that we cannot build safe homes without our current state building code is just silliness. So Representative Keeler, again, thank you for authoring the legislation. Thank you for moving this forward. And let's just make sure that that we don't allow the perfect to get in the way of this really good project.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. I see that Jeffrey Warner has their hand up from Alchemy. I don't know if you had a comment. And if you could, you're on mute. If you could introduce yourself to the committee for the record and go ahead.
Hi, my name's Jeffrey Warner. I'm an architect with Alchemy Architects. And there's a number of other architects that are on the call today who've been working with Tom and Envision and half the other people on this call to basically address these issues. As an architect, I just wanted to say that Representative Brindley said all of the things that we would have said. And so as an architect, we want to just basically reiterate the things that we see as professionals trying to answer these very questions. And it doesn't matter how many tools you have in your toolbox, how much vision you have, how much enthusiasm you have from the community, if your codes and the cities are not allowed to allow you to work differently and work with the tools that are essentially of the present and the future rather than those of the past. And so I'll just say that we have worked with both the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul to help them rewrite their zoning codes in various efforts with various demonstration projects. Our experience is throughout the country with doing modular work with something called WE houses, which are built in factories and sort of moved to the site as very sustainable, very high quality housing solutions. And despite that sort of experience and despite those tools, that it's not unlike the kind of permitting that it's allocated towards sort of RV vehicles, except for permanent housing. Despite all of those, we've been frustrated again and again about trying to get smaller houses built in urban areas, just due to the restrictions that are the codes place on this sort of interface between RVs and the tent and the multifamily house, essentially. So I'll just sort of stop in case there's any specific questions. Or technically, I'm happy to follow up later with questions if need be, but I just wanted to say that I think this is really an exciting thing that's being done.
Thank you very much, Mr. Warner. I saw that Representative Howard has a question. Go ahead, Rep. Howard. Or comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. Just wanted to thank Representative Keeler and all the testifiers and take a chance to mostly agree with Representative New Brindley. You know, I don't always have that opportunity, so I wanted to take it. You know, we really shouldn't make perfect be the enemy of good here. And anytime we innovate, it does create sort of challenges and questions and tension, and we should wrestle through those. But I just wanted to call out that we are not going to be able to solve our affordable housing crisis unless we are willing to innovate and think differently. The problem is too large to just kind of be comfortable working within the parameters of the status quo. And so that's what's so exciting about this proposal. And I think it offers quite a lot of benefit in many ways as we look to the future ways we tackle our affordable housing crisis.
Thank you so much, Representative Howard. I saw a lot of nodding heads on that comment, so I think you're in good company. Members, are there any other questions or comments? Representative Hornstein. You're muted, Rep. Hornstein. We're going to go. Representative Hollins has her hands up.
There
you go.
I don't know. I clicked it many times and it didn't happen. Very quickly, Madam Chair, just also my thanks to Vice Chair Keeler and all the testimony. I'm strongly in support of this. And maybe it's a question for any of the testifiers. You know, Chair Gomez was very instrumental in doing a similar concept, but indoors. And I'm wondering, I know these are meant to be, you know, on church properties outdoors. I'm wondering whether, you know, the indoor concept is, and Ms. Krisnick had mentioned this to me yesterday, but, you know, to what extent is the indoor concept also inclusive of you know, this idea here?
Do any of our testifiers have a comment on that? I'm kind of looking toward the architect types, but maybe we'll need to follow up on that. I don't know if anybody has a comment. Mr. Fisher?
Well, yeah, I think it's an interesting kind of in-between model. I mean, it both offers more personal privacy, so it's better than a shelter, but it's still within a single room. And so it has some of the downsides of shelters that we heard Andrea talk about, which is you're less independent. You're more in a space with maybe others who are also struggling with some of the same issues you're struggling with. So I think it's maybe one possibility. It's certainly better than a lot of the shelters, but I think having the ability to be in your own unit outside, being able to exit into the out of doors as opposed to a shelter-like space is a significant improvement in living conditions.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for that. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Hollins, did you have anything quickly before we vote?
No, I put my hand down. No worries.
Okay, great. Thank you. Vice Chair Keeler, we're kind of going to dispense with closing comments because we've had such a great committee discussion. If that's okay, go straight to the vote. Would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Vice Chair Keeler renews her motion that House File 1484 be returned to the full committee. The CLA will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair votes aye. Keeler.
Aye.
Keeler, aye. New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley, aye. Davids.
Davids, aye.
Davids, aye. Heinrich.
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Hollins.
Aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Ryer.
Aye.
Ryer, aye. There are 11 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion passes and House File 1484 is on its way back to our full committee. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. We really appreciate it. So finally today, we have a presentation on the Envision community, which, as you heard from Mr. Fisher, is sort of these are like sibling projects in a lot of ways. So we thought it would be great to hear from this group today. The Envision community is a proposal to build and operate a 2-year live demonstration housing between 15 and 40 people in microhomes clustered around a common house and living cooperatively as an intentional community. So with us, we have Envision community project manager, Rochelle Washington. Ms. Washington, I'm gonna pass it over to you if you could introduce yourself and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you so much. I have my camera out because I kept getting disconnected. Like, where's my service? What's going on? Not now.
Well, we can see you and hear you great. So hopefully we'll keep up here.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you. So I'm Rochelle, project manager. I'm going to pass it on to Freddie.
Thank you for hosting us and allowing us to share our work. Today, we're going to give a brief introduction to Envision and then answer questions you may have. I'm in Envision. My name is Freddie. I'm an Envision leader. My story is part of Envision is that I have experienced homelessness, living on the streets, a drug addiction. I was formerly homeless, and Envision is a big part of my giving back to my community and making sure that everyone lives their healthier life by being placed in a house. And with that, I pass it on to Janelle.
I am Janelle. Y'all see me before? But I am a vision leader, and a vision is a big part of my life because I am trying to work on it. We've been working on it for almost four years on it, and the thing is that homeless people came up with ideas, and we are the 5 that was picked and that was up there. And I am so glad that we got up there and doing this. As you know, I'm a lot of a lot of things trying to help homeless people because I was homeless and I was formerly homeless and I am on the verge of being homeless and I pass it down to Sherry.
Real quick, sorry, Mr. Freddy and Ms. Janelle, could you guys just say your full names so that it's in the official record? Sorry.
Okay. My name is Freddy Turan. And I'd like to speak up for those who's not here. We wish we was here, Dwayne Parker and Rome Darren.
Thank you so much. Ms. Janelle?
My name is Janelle Anderson.
Great. Sorry, Sherry. Sorry to interrupt you. Please go
ahead. That's okay. My name is Sherry Shannon, and I'm an Envision leader and also Street Voice of Change leader. And reason why this means so much to me, because I experienced homelessness before, and I was a single parent with two children trying to hold on to a job and then plus keep a room in the shelters. And that was very challenging to me. And that's why this means so much to me, because I don't want the people that experience homeless now go through all these challenges that I have went through. So with that, I pass it on to Bill.
Hi, my name is Bill Walsh. I'm a surgeon at Hennepin Healthcare, and I'm also a research fellow at the University of Minnesota, Minnesota Design Center. And I help Envision community with their research needs. And I'm going to pass it on to Rochelle Washington.
Hi, I'm Rochelle Washington, the Envision Project Manager with Task Unlimited. John?
And I'm Jonathan Ugga. I'm the Associate Director of Mental Health Services for Task Unlimited. And Task Unlimited is the managing Envision, with a year history of providing mental health, housing, and employment services for clients in Hennepin, Ramsey, Anoka, and Dakota counties.
Sherry?
All right, I just want to start with, Envision is a community, it's a collaborative of 20 organizations that works together to create a new type of housing for Minneapolis so that all people, including people with very low income, have what they need to live their healthiest life. The Envision Community Collaborative includes homeless advocate, housing provider, supportive service agency, health expert, education institutional, faith community, and others group interested in making Envision a reality. And also I wanted to say Envision is a mixture of intentional community and truly affordable housing. And I'm going to turn it over to Freddie to continue from there.
At Envision, we have a saying that relationships are more important than roof. That means we work hard and create conditions necessary to live a cooperative and support each other. Another page I'd like to share with you is called Shared Value Guide, our intentional community. And Shared Value, we see a number of things that we learn from each other. We learn to trust each other, because when you're on the street, it's hard to trust people because so many people have turned against us or make promises that was never kept. Once we get into housing, we learn to let go of the things that we no longer need, like I heard earlier about a drug addiction. That's one of the things. Once people, you know, people self-medicate themselves right here on the streets because they have no house. And we deal with a lot of stress and emotional about being on the streets. But once they place into housing, they let go of a lot of those things that makes them unhealthy. And we learn to share responsibility. And that's like we take the initiative to help keep the yard clean, shovel the snow, do some kitchen cleaning, share meals. And just like we said, I may not know how to cook, but I learned from another person who may know how to cook. And it's like a social change for us from living on the streets to living in the community. And with that, I pass it over to John.
Thanks, Freddie. So I want to take another minute to really delve into what intentional community looks like. Much like over at Settled, and as Freddie said, a key part of these communities is residents holding shared values and having a desire to live together in an interdependent community with each other and contribute to the success of everyone living here. So each individual brings gifts to the table. Some folks may be great cooks, be able to cook community meals. Others may have a green thumb and be able to lead the effort in creating community gardens, work on the common space. others, especially with when it comes to substances, maybe in AA, they may be stronger in their recovery and can help others in the community that may be earlier on in the recovery process. You know, disagreements do come up in intentional community. That's one of the things that we have heard when really running into some resistance to this is just concern about safety and conflict. But, you know, disagreements and conflicts come up with no matter who you live with, whether it is family or friends or in an intentional community like this. And much as like a family or team, you're able to work through it in an intentional community. The disagreements are worked through as a community so that all involved can come to a solution and everyone can hold each other accountable and following through on those solutions. One thing that we have learned as a managing organization at TAS Unlimited, we operate 21 lodges that are each their own intentional communities. No two operate in the same way. What that looks like is going to be dependent on the individuals that make up that community, what gifts and experiences they bring to the table, and what solutions work for that particular group. What we hope to bring to Envision as both leaders and TAS staff is the experience bringing people together, fostering relationships, and facilitating those conversations between people to ensure success in these intentional communities. Turn it over to Sherry.
So the next part, we just want to spend some time talking a little bit more about intentional community because it really is the secret sauce of Envision. And if you take away anything from this presentation, it's the importance of intentional community. And so community is sort of a fuzzy word and it's hard to really wrap your mind around. But really community is just social connections or a network or relationship between people. And we know that social connections have important impacts for health. In fact, social connections may be among the most powerful influences on health. And this quote says it best, our health depends on more than our own individual biology or even our own individual choices and actions. Our health also depends quite literally on the biology, choices, and actions of those around us. A key factor in determining our health is the health of others. And Envision community creates housing stability by surrounding its residents with people who have the same lived experience of homelessness, and those social connections promote acceptance and belonging within the community. But Envision also creates new social connections by having people who've never experienced homelessness live at Envision. We believe those new social connections will also foster stability and other beneficial health choices. And I know the word contagious is sort of like a trigger word in this day and age, but I'm gonna use it. We've all experienced how the actions of others are contagious. And you see your neighbor going out for a walk and you think, maybe I should go for a walk. And we believe that housing stability and healthy behaviors will be contagious at Envision. So I'm gonna hand off to Sherry, who will talk about what mix of people will live at Envision and how we're gonna create the social connectedness.
Envision, who will live at Envision? It's a diverse group of people who live at Envision. Envision was designed by me and other people with lived experience of homelessness. We wanted to create housing for ourselves that we could truly afford. We felt that diversity was important for a healthy community. 20% of residents will have experienced chronic homelessness and have complex health issues. 60% of residents will have experienced housing instability, but have straightforward health needs. 20% of residents will have never experienced homelessness instability. It will be a mixed group, meaning some residents will have low income while others will live above those levels. But no matter what, every Envision resident has to pay rent. Some people will have programs to help pay for rent. Most residents will have jobs. Some residents will have disability. Even though Envision resident will be a diverse group, everyone at Envision will want to live small and live in a community. Another reason we made Envision is that affordable housing is not affordable. Janelle.
Housing is not affordable because I live in a house
Janelle, you're muted. And
oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Okay. I live in an affordable apartment. I live in a PPO apartment that is not affordable. They supposed to be affordable, but they only at the 65 MO affordable. My rent is $760, but I only get $771 from Social Security. So that means I only paying my rent. I'm not paying anything else but my rent because I cannot afford it. I cannot afford the rent. Is it back to Freddie?
No, to go to Sherry.
Oh, Sherry, go back to Sherry.
Sherry, you're muted if you're talking.
I'm sorry about that. Envision costs 60% less to develop per person than comparable permit supporting housing. Envision community is designed to be truly affordable. Our housing system is not fair because people with low income cannot find a place to live at a reasonable price. We design Envision so that people of all finance mean have an equal opportunity to live in a designated place. Pass on to Rochelle.
Next, we are going to show a 1-minute video tour of our show unit. Please remember this unit was designed and built before the pandemic. Because of COVID safety recommendations, we have changed our design from the one you will see in the video to promote social distancing by removing the common hallway and putting a bathroom with a shower and sink and toilet in the unit.
Okay, this is what we call the living area, where we got storage space under the bed, TV. I love this area. This is where you can put your microwave and your small refrigerator. It's one of the comfortable areas that I would love to live in. Here you have where you got storage space for your dishes, your silverware, a board to keep notes and tabs on your daily activities. And like I said, that bed, that bottom part right there, you see the gray spot where you can move out to sit, as Rochelle said, recliner for the chair right here. It's so amazing to have your own key to be able to go in your own space and be safe. And like I said, the bathroom, like Rochelle said, this is what before the COVID-19. Now it's designed, it's going back to where we're going to have both showers on both sides and bathroom so that people can live their best life and healthiest life during the quarantine. So with that, I pass it back over to Rochelle.
Thank you, Freddie. So here's our proposal. We would like our first community to include 24 to 38 people living cooperatively in micro homes with the common house. This will be located somewhere in Minneapolis, and we are actively searching for land. The reason we intend to locate in Minneapolis is because our new type of housing is allowed there. Our group spent over 1 year creating a new intentional community cluster development zoning ordinance with the city of Minneapolis to allow housing like Envision Community. The city council unanimously passed the zoning ordinance November 2019. We need your help finding land and securing development rights to that land. We cannot begin fundraising to build Envision until we have secured development rights for land. So our project cannot go forward without getting the land first. We made an attempt at one piece of land and realized we need additional political support to acquire land. Your help with this process will be greatly appreciated. This is the end of our presentation. We want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to share with you our Envision community. If you have questions after our discussion today, you can always contact us at envision@taskunlimited.org. Now we can open up for questions and discussions.
All right, thank you so much for that presentation. We really appreciate it. Members, are there any questions or comments about the presentation that we just saw? All right, I'm not seeing any. And if there aren't questions or comments, we'll end on time. I guess I just, if there is a couple minutes, I wanted to
just note that, you know, that we, I mean, we are talking about, like, about tiny homes today, right? About little structures for people to live in. But I think that what we really ended up talking about was connection and community and meaning and those things that we know that people need to live good lives. And, you know, I mean, this is a little afield, but, but, you know, I have an 8-year-old and we have evolved in such a way that our children need us for so many years, right? What that says about us as human beings is that we have evolved to live in community with each other, that we've evolved to exist in connection with one another. And one of the things that happens, I think, when, you know, especially somebody who experiences chronic unsheltered homelessness for many years, is that there is the rupture of so many of those connections that give us meaning and that help us, like, find a way forward. And so I, in both of these ideas that we've been talking about today, I just am really thankful for how intentional, you know, the folks who are thinking about the design are being with respect to that issue, right, that Representative New Brindley said, which is the opposite of all of these conditions that, you know, beloved members of our community find themselves in, is connection. And that's how we, like, restore people to where they need to be in their lives. So if there are no further discussion, I just really want to again express my sincere gratitude to everybody who has come in front of our committee today. I think we had a really good connection or really good conversation, and it always feels good, like I said, you know, to pass bills out of our committee with everybody kind of in agreement. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for the work that all of the members are putting in on this committee. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. And seeing nothing else for the good of the order, we are adjourned. Have a great day.